Lawmakers return to Washington after August recess.
The most concrete deadline Congress will face in the next few weeks here is funding the government.
Plus, is China winning the race to the next generation of wireless technology?
Over the next 3 or 4 months, they're going to have 15 times as many major 5G cell sites than the U.S. is going to have.
This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Before we get to those stories, here are some other top headlines we're following. The Bahamas are struggling in the early days of recovery, just over a week after Hurricane Dorian made landfall there as a Category 5 hurricane. The Wall Street Journal's Valerie Borline has more details.
We're a week and a half in, really, from the time Dorian got on our radar. And the Bahamas, as you know, have been just so hard hit. The death toll is in the 40s right now, but President Trump said over the weekend that the officials in Bahamas are saying it's going to rise significantly. And whether that's hundreds or thousands, we just don't know, but there are many, many, many people missing. So right now in the Bahamas, in Abaco and Grand Bahama, you have lots of aid coming in, international groups, governmental groups from the U.S. and others sending in food and supplies and medicine. But it's just going to be a long slog. The islands were just so devastated.
The coastal United States, meanwhile, was spared much of the devastation feared early on.
Overall, the U.S. coast really fared well compared to this time last week when we feared a direct landfall from a Category 5 hurricane. But there was significant flooding in the Carolinas, particularly out in the Outer Banks. So the North Carolina coast has kind of some barrier islands that jut miles out into the Atlantic, and that's what got hit the hardest. There was significant flooding on the island of Ocracoke, which is a pretty remote place. It's normally reachable by ferry or private plane or boat. There were people who had been through hurricane after hurricane after hurricane who said they had 6 feet of water in their yards out there. And then also the main thoroughfare, the highway that runs along the Outer Banks was badly flooded. But I will say about North Carolina, just one quick note, you'll remember that last year in September, Florence just devastated the state as far inland as, you know, an hour or two inland, in part because the ground was very saturated. There'd been a lot of rain, and Florence dumped 35, 36 inches of rain over the course of several days. And so the inland flooding was so significant last year that really the governor and others are just breathing a sigh of relief that Dorian was more of a 6 inches of rainstorm and it moved out of the state fairly quickly.
But our Valerie Borline says we're still in the heart of hurricane season.
Florence hit in mid-September last year. So there are a couple storms out in the Atlantic that we're watching closely. You know, I talked to several elected officials and they say, gosh, our next steps have got to include getting ready for next year and the next year and the next year, because it just seems that the intensity and the amount of rainfall of these storms is increasing.
Dorian was categorized as a weakening post-tropical cyclone on Sunday. President Trump announced on Twitter on Saturday that he was calling off a secret meeting with Taliban leaders and the president of Afghanistan at Camp David after a Taliban bomb attack in Kabul killed an American soldier. We report that the president's decision stemmed from opposing views within the administration and the Taliban's refusal to meet certain conditions. The Afghan government praised the decision to call off talks between the U.S. and the Taliban on Sunday. For the latest on this developing story, please head to our website, wsj.com. Protests continued in Hong Kong over the weekend, where tens of thousands of people took to the streets and pro-democracy activists made a direct appeal to the U.S. for help. Many are calling on U.S. lawmakers to impose penalties on Hong Kong or Chinese officials who suppress basic freedoms. Clashes with police took place late Sunday, with some protesters setting a fire at a subway station entrance and smashing windows. Police also fired tear gas on protesters. Hong Kong agreed to withdraw a controversial extradition bill that first sparked protests more than 3 months ago, but that step has so far failed to quell the protest movement. San Francisco has offered to buy state utility PG&E's electrical line serving the city for $2.5 billion. The utility, which is facing billions of dollars in liabilities for starting a series of deadly wildfires, is expected to soon unveil its reorganization plan to emerge from bankruptcy. San Francisco's offer is considered a vote of no confidence in the utility, which is considering the offer. It would still need approval of federal regulators and California's Public Utilities Commission. Office sharing company WeWork is now considering a valuation below $20 billion, as investors express skepticism. That would mark a drop from last week when we reported that WeWork was considering halving its valuation from the $47 billion raised in private capital this year. Lawmakers return to the Capitol this week, and for a look at the work ahead of them, our Charlie Turner spoke with reporter Andrew Duren in Washington.
Andy, Congress returns Monday from the August recess to face what you write is a crushing array of issues. Given that it's September, it seems like the first basic issue is approving a spending bill to keep the government funded for the new fiscal year. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the most concrete deadline Congress will face in the next few weeks here is funding the government. So the current funding will run out at the end of September 30th when the current federal fiscal year ends. And so that gives lawmakers just a few weeks, actually, to reach some sort of agreement to keep the government open. Because of some delays over the summer, the Senate has not passed any sort of appropriations legislation so far, so they're pretty far behind where they would want to be to make sure they get everything done in time. So already lawmakers are looking at some sort of temporary funding measure, kind of stopgap bill that will keep the government open for a few more weeks after the end of September and give Congress more time to try and negotiate an agreement on the broader, you know, year-long spending bill.
Andy, what's after that? Trade? Don't the White House and congressional Democrats still have to reach some sort of agreement to ratify a new trade deal with Mexico and Canada?
Yeah, the administration and then Republicans on the Hill are really pushing for some sort of vote, but this is something that Democrats for a while now, they've been pushing for the administration to reopen certain portions of the deal and renegotiate it with Canada and Mexico. So that's something that you're likely to see a lot of talk about it on both sides. I think Republicans are expecting to try and put a lot of pressure on Democrats to try and force a vote on this. But Democrats, you know, they've been working, members of the Ways and Means Committee have been working with the administration for a while now to try and figure out if there's any sort of way where they can do, you know, very specific changes that Democrats are looking for on things like labor standards in these other countries and some things about biologics and a few other issues like that. And so Democrats are still pushing for those changes, whereas Republicans want to pass the agreement as it exists now.
Then there is the matter of gun restrictions. From what I understand, the House Judiciary Committee will vote this week on three bills involving tighter gun control.
Yeah, so the House Judiciary Committee is coming back. They will be beginning immediately with a series of gun policy bills that they're taking up. The real question, though, on any sort of gun policy change is going to be the Senate. This is a situation where Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, a Republican from Kentucky, he has said that he will bring to the floor any sort of gun legislation that the president and the administration supports and has proposed and is very vocally behind. And there's a good amount of concern among Republicans that if there were to be, you know, if they were to support almost basically any sort of gun legislation, that could, you know, have political consequences for them with reliable, loyal Republican base voters who, you know, are very invested in their Second Amendment rights. And so the thinking is that to give some of those Republicans political cover, the president would have to come out and very forcefully, very publicly, and very consistently advocate for that legislation so that, you know, these Republicans could say that they're standing with the president and supporting the president's agenda. But it's still very much an open question whether the administration will take that very focused effort to pass some sort of gun control legislation. And then there's the question of whatever the administration wanted to support or felt like it could support and wanted to go lobby on for the Hill, whether that is something that then Democrats would find, acceptable.
Talk about the immigration fights between President Trump and Congress. Doesn't President Trump want to include more funding for building his border wall in any stopgap spending measure?
When we talk about funding the government, I mean, really what we end up talking about very quickly is funding for a border wall. I mean, that is by far the most contentious and politically complicated issue or funding priority. I mean, there are a lot of other things that Republicans and Democrats disagree on, but you know, the one thing that really seems to be kind of the insurmountable hurdle for both parties has been figuring out some way to agree on border wall funding. in that stopgap measure, the administration is already starting to try and work on getting more money for the wall. So they have said that as part of any sort of extension of current funding, they need more money basically to be able to continue to build the wall as they have been. And so that's already something that Democrats have said is unacceptable. You know, depending on how that is resolved, that could be a sign that we're in for another, you know, potentially very drawn out and contentious fight over funding the border wall for the next full fiscal year.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Andrew Duren speaking with Charlie Turner. China is making big moves in the race to 5G, the next generation of wireless technology. The Wall Street Journal's Stu Wu, reporting from Beijing, has more on why China is moving faster.
The really quick answer is that China has some advantages in logistics and organization that the U.S. doesn't have. They can order the local governments to work with the wireless carriers and the provincial governments to make this happen because it's a national priority. In the U.S., you have a problem of neighbors complaining when a new cell tower goes up across the street because they don't like the way it looks or something like that. And then the federal government and state governments and municipal governments and the private wireless carriers are suing each other because they don't agree with the federal government trying to order all these towns to open up their, say, street lamps to make it available to put up a new cell antenna on it.
He says that may soon allow China to surpass the United States.
I think it's important to note that right now, the U.S. actually is ahead on 5G networks that are available to people. If you're in a big city in the U.S., there's a good chance you could buy a 5G cell phone and use the networks right now. But in the next coming weeks, either as soon as this month or October, China's going to start turning on these 5G networks. And over the next 3 or 4 months, they're going to have 15 times as many major 5G cell sites than the U.S. is going to have. So it's going to happen pretty soon.
But the U.S. is also putting up a fight.
The main telecom regulator in the U.S., which is the Federal Communications Commission, says that the U.S. is leading right now and they're poised to maintain that lead. They think that China is really inefficient at building things, especially if the government leads a project. They think the free market system in the U.S. is going to encourage these private wireless carriers to build a better system that's faster and more reliable than China is.
We'd like to know what you think. Can the U.S.'s private sector-led approach to next-generation 5G technology compete with China's government-led approach? Let us know by tweeting us at WSJ Podcasts. And that's what's news for this Monday morning. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.